and really having an interesting time investigating different religions. And so I'm going to kind of draw that together today based on some of the things that I feel like God's been teaching me. If you're visiting with us today, or if you're new to Fox Creek, we're very interested in unlocking the potential of each home, each household. Also, the beauty and the power of the God story is something that I think about this when I look at teenagers, some of them in my family, and I watch us as we sing, and I think about how important it is for God to get a hold of somebody's heart, because, you know, the words mean nothing without what's going on in here. And so the beauty and the power of the God story, how beautiful it is, and how much power is there for us. So we try to animate that and have over the years. Also, conversations leading to freedom. We've been talking more about that, and that's kind of what I'm wrapping up a little bit today. But, you know, Skip has been really good about introducing us to the idea of being insiders in the world. And so we've been giving that attention for a while. Also, intentional living. I actually hear younger people saying this all the time. Well, you just need to be intentional about it. So I'm taking credit for that because, you know, who was intentional before I started talking about it? And then our choice to be the church rather than to go to church, and then engaging as harvest workers, because the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. And then also hearing the words, well done. Well done. You know, that's the heart of our elders, and I know that's my heart as a teacher, is that I want you to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. That's what motivates me, and that's what motivates us at Fox Creek. So that's just kind of who we are. And but that leads us to the conversation on common ground. And we talked about the two religions that there are, the two garden religions, even though we were going to talk today, and we've been talking for a few weeks about the different religions of the world. They basically all spring from two religions, the worship of the one true God or the worship of self. So we've talked about that a little bit. We started out talking about Judaism and what our connections are with Judaism, with Christianity. And it's interesting, Rachel and Bernie went to the White House this week, which was kind of cool. And they invited a bunch of radio station people, so Bernie went along for that. And it was a faith initiative conversation with people from radio stations. And the couple things that I thought were really encouraging, Mike Pence was there, and so was Jared Kushner. And Jared is a practicing Jew. And Mike Pence is obviously a Christian. And so it was really cool hearing about the faith initiative. Apparently, it was moved out of the White House in years past because it didn't belong in the White House. But this administration, and I won't use his name because I know people get mad and pull out their pitchforks, but this administration brought the faith initiative back into the White House. And not only did they do that, but they have representatives of faith in every one of the departments of our government that are just there, you know, related to communicating faith issues, and I assume to pray because they see what's going on each day. So I was thinking about that when I was thinking about Jared Kushner being Jewish, and I was thinking about our Jewish roots. We talked about that, how that ties in with Christianity. Christianity, I can get along with anybody in Christianity as long as they are following Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life, okay? When it departs from that, then, you know, I don't have a lot of patience for it. But when it comes to Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life, that's why I feel like I have things in common with Lutherans and Catholics and Methodists, and I have it right there, you know, when I'm experiencing Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life. So it's been good for me to think through that in the process of these different conversations. We talked a little bit about Jesus and the cults, and you remember that there's kind of a continuum, and I'll return to that and review it in a second, but there are cults in the world, and there are cults in America, and they spring out of idolatry, and they spring out of that other religion that came out of the garden, the religion of self. So you can count on cults being about somebody. They're about some group. They're something that makes people special and different than anybody else, which is very much different than authentic Christianity. I'm not going to talk. I did a bunch of reading and I did as many interviews as I could related to Islam and Buddha and Hindu and Confucius. We may return to the issue of atheism and agnosticism and the new hybrids. We may talk about that at the end of the summer. I want to give a little bit more time to that. But one of the things that I learned as I was listening and reading is that I assume, you know, Christianity has been historically a culture in America, okay? It's been part of our culture. And I can relate to that. I can understand that. And as I listen to other people talk from different parts of the world and their faith, they experience the same thing. There is Hindu culturism. There is Buddhist cultural backgrounds and underpinnings or whatever. And I thought, well, my goodness, that's one thing that I share in common with all the people of every religion in the world is that I know what it's like to grow up in a cultural environment that's tied into religion. Now, we are accelerating at a very fast pace, which is why I think we're going to return to atheism and agnosticism, because I think agnosticism and atheism have eclipsed as the biggest religion, claimed religion in America now. That's something new just of late. Whoever's keeping the numbers, I never understand how you would be motivated to do that, but people apparently keep track of things, and if you can trust the numbers. And as I looked at each of these, I thought, well, these are all tied into culture. And in fact, as you talk to people of different faiths, they'll often say, well, you know, it's not as, when you describe your authentic faith, and I think I've shared stories like this before, I don't feel that personal connection. It's more of a connection with a religion. And I can, as I've been thinking about it, I can relate more to that now, because that's what Christianity is. It's our cultural environment, but that doesn't necessarily fire the heart. It's the same, that's true with all other religions. So that's one thing that you can understand. That's one thing that you can have in common. Even though you have pursued authentic connection with God, you understand Christianity. And so consequently, you have kind of a leg up on understanding what it means to be a part of any cultural religion. Does that make sense? And if you approach your relationships with people from that perspective, that's a common ground thing that you can understand. It doesn't mean that I agree with everything in Christianity, except for the way, the truth, and the life. What do I want to transfer over to when I'm talking to a Buddhist? How do you feel about the way and the truth and the life? How do you feel about Jesus? Because when it comes right down to it, you know, Jesus is the answer to every religion's longing in every religion's heart. So we talked a little bit about the traditions and philosophies of men. And I've been kind of weaving this in because I didn't really want to do a teaching on woe is me because, you know, the world is like falling apart, you know, at a very fast pace from an ideological perspective. Not like I should be surprised. In the last days, difficult times will come, right? Because men will be lovers of self rather than lovers of God. So I don't know why that surprises me. You know the guy who sells mattresses? You know, the mattress guy? Have you ever seen him? He wears a blue shirt and he's got a... Huh? The pillow guy, yeah, okay. He just started selling mattresses. Anyway, do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, he's everywhere. Well, so I saw him on a little bit of Mark Levin's show last night, and he was so excited about where our country is heading because he's a businessman. So he's really excited about all the business, but he's also a person of faith. And it was so interesting watching him talk because he is like the ultimate optimist. He believes that we have made a pivot and we are on an upswing. And I'm going, man, I like this guy. I don't know that I believe what he's saying is true. But it was cool. It was just cool to hear his story and to see another person articulating their story related to what it means to experience authentic life. So the philosophies, and if I were going to summarize this, I would say, if you're a younger person sitting here right now, and that'd be everybody under the age of 66. If you're a younger person sitting here right now, your job, and you're going to have to be really careful because destructive philosophies are being woven in to faith right now at an alarming rate, okay? So this weaving began a long time ago, but it's really ramping up. Now, why is it ramping up? It's because it's the end of the age. And at the end of the age, difficult times will come. It's going to be hard to discern. Like it says in, I think, Matthew, even if it were possible, the elect, the chosen ones of God would be deceived, even if that were possible. So it's incumbent upon us when we're talking to our friends and our teachers and our neighbors who all have all of these different philosophies and ideas, they're melding them together and they're basically morphing what the scriptures teach into something that is more palatable. And in Timothy, that talks about they will heap to themselves teachers who have itching ears. They're going to hear the things, or they want to hear the things that make their ears resonate. And that's pretty much the culture that you're living in. So it's really incumbent upon you to figure out, how do I weave my way through? Now, where you go to church, obviously reading your Bible, who you listen to, who you associate with, those are all really important things. But when it comes down to it, you have to make those determinations inside of yourself. You have to be intentional enough about what is true and what is false that you can make those calls for yourself, not expecting anybody else to do that. So we talked a little bit about being authentic. And the idea of if you want authenticity, you have to go back to Jesus. Because there's a certain authenticity that comes with Judaism, but what were the Jewish leaders like when Jesus came? You know, they were awful. They were just awful. They had taken everything that the law had taught and they had twisted it. And so Jesus shows up and kind of resets everything. And he resets things and he says, you've heard that it was said, but I say to you, and he explains once again what the kingdom looks like because it's the fullness of times. And as he resets it, he resets what it means to be authentic. And in that authenticity, he passes that on to his disciples, not just the 12 disciples, but to the 120, to the men and to the women who are part of his inner circle. And he entrusts them with an understanding of what's authentic. And so everything that we have in the Gospels and in the letters is all, what did you see? What did you hear? Everything after that is, let us tell you what it means. Okay? You don't need anybody to tell you what it means. You don't need me to tell you what it means. It's all laid out very clearly. This whole crap about there are so many interpretations and you can make the Bible say whatever you want it to say. I get what people are saying, but that is not true. If you look at the woven threads of the scriptures, they are very clear what is sound and what is true and what is right. And most of all, what's accurate. So that's what you want to believe. You want to be an authentic believer. It doesn't matter what age you are. You want to pursue authenticity. And to do that, you have to go back. Then there's the expressive part, religion, philosophy, and knowledge. We're in the middle of that right now. And from that, there are add-ons, emerging add-ons. And those are all on that sheet back there if you didn't get one. I tried to list that out for you so that you could see it. And then that then moves over into people who twist the truth. Truth twisters to you probably are more evident than they are to some other people because you're well taught in this body. You're well represented by your elders as far as sound doctrine. But truth twisters are very successful because, you know, when you're twisting the truth in mush, it's not hard to do. And that's what's happening in our culture right now. And it's been going on for a while. So we have to look at what's been handed down. What's been handed down? By religion? No. Is everything about religious people and religion evil? No. Do I have common ground with people who are in Christianity? Yes. As long as they are pursuing the authenticity of I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And think about, see, that's what's going to get Christians into trouble at the end of the age, right? No man comes to the Father but by me. Jesus, who do you think you are? And maybe more so, who do your followers think that they are? So, I'd like to look at a few passages today related to common ground conversations. That was all kind of a backdrop, and it's a little bit of a review. And I better get on with it, or I'll be running out of time, because here I am. Yak, yak, yak. Turn over to John chapter 3. Yeah, it's hard for me because, you know, tonight I'll start thinking about what we're going to talk about next week. And so I'll immerse myself in it, not just from a study perspective, but I'll think about it, and I'll think about it, and I'll think about it. I think it's called meditating. And as I meditate on it, I'm just like overwhelmed, because any part of the God story that you take, it can be very overwhelming because God has spoken on everything. But I love this passage, and you probably are going to recognize it. John chapter 3, verse 16. I think I saw it at a football game once. For God so loved the world. Now, this is the part you know, but let's watch the rest of it here. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. So Bernie and I are driving down the road the other day, and she said, John 3:17. There was a sign. I said, John 3:17. She said, what does that say? And I said, well, I think, and so I said it, and I said it wrong. So obviously I've got 3:16 down, but I need to work on 3:17. For God did not send the Son into the world to judge the world. Okay, so whoever put this sign up is saying, hey, it's not about judgment. And I think this relates to having common ground. A lot of times it's either or, it's me and you. And that decision has already been made. Okay? God didn't send his Son into the world to judge the world, but that the world might be saved through him. That's the purpose of God. He who believes in him is not judged. He who does not believe has been judged already. So it's the whole escape thing, the idea of escaping, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men loved the darkness. They held to the darkness rather than clinging to the light which came into the world, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But he who practices the truth comes to the light so that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. And so it's not a passive light. It's a penetrating light. It's a living light that comes to life when somebody invites the light of Jesus into our lives. And see, that's the goal of conversations. Because we don't want to make people into Christians. We want people to see the light, to experience the personal light, not the light of a group of people or a social group of people or a religious people, but that light that you know is inside of you. You've experienced it. Maybe you can remember when it first came in. Maybe you were 7 years old or 4 years old or 20 years old or whatever you are, but you know what this process that he's describing. So common ground conversations, that's what we're talking about. That's what testimony is all about. It's all about you encountering the light. It's all about asking your Buddhist neighbor and your Hindu neighbor, tell me about light. Tell me what that means to you. How do you experience light? Anyway, that's one thought. Second one, turn over to Luke chapter 9. So I tried to boil it down. You know, what would be the most helpful things related to, if you want to just understand in general where people are coming from, take the sheet that I handed out. It's been on the last two or three podcasts that we've done, and you just print it off. It's there. I mean, you put it somewhere. If you end up having a neighbor move in and they're Muslim, you know, pull the sheet out or look it up and look at it and go, oh, it's got a line on every one of the religions, what the basic beliefs are, including Christianity. Luke chapter 9, verse 46. An argument started among them, the disciples, as to which of them might be the greatest. But Jesus, knowing that what they were thinking in their heart, took a child and stood them by his side. So this is the context of the whole child thing, okay? A lot of people like to quote this. This is the context. His disciples are arguing about who's the greatest. In fact, in the other passage, it says, they didn't want to tell him what they were arguing about because it was downright embarrassing when you think about it. But Jesus, knowing what they were thinking in their heart, took a child and stood him by his side. And he said to them, whoever receives this child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me. For the one who is least among all of you, this is the one who is great. John answered and said, Master, we saw somebody casting out demons. Now think about how this is all woven together here in this teaching, in this account. John answered and said, his John, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him because he does not follow along with us. But Jesus said to him, do not hinder him, for he who is not against you is for you. So before you start flipping out about somebody else's beliefs, somebody else's religion, or whatever, and there are things to run away from, I get that. But maybe the first step is to think in terms of what he's talking about here. You know, he who is not against us is for us. Now, this is what I think is kind of crazy about the atheistic growing population among your neighbors, is that they're not just dedicated to their religion, they have created a whole new religion, and this religion is pissed off about Christianity. Okay? They don't know the difference between authentic Christianity and Christianity. They are angry because they look at history and they've made their determinations and they have chosen, like the Psalms talk about, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. But that automatically puts them in opposition based on what this passage is talking about right here. So always ask that question, you know, who's against us? You know, figure out if somebody really is against you. Just because somebody has a different background, a different faith than you do, that does not mean they're against you. And if they are, so be it. Shake the dust off of your feet, off from the shoes of your feet, and move on down the road. But there are millions of people who are not where atheists are at yet. And there are millions of people who know that they don't have the light inside of them. They know, even if they might be practicing religion. Turn over to Matthew 9. Mark 9? Oh, cool. Why did they write this up here? No, I'm skipping Mark 9. I'm sorry. Yeah. They're parallel passages, and I brought out the amplification of the two because I knew I was going to run out of time pretty soon. Matthew chapter 9, verse 35. I understand, though, why you guys are skeptical when I say to turn someplace. Matthew 9, verse 35. I just love this because this is such an insight into the heart. Into God's heart. Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom. And he was proclaiming, he was also healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and they were dispirited. They were like sheep without a shepherd. And this is one of the questions that you want to ask whenever you're talking to somebody who has different ideas and beliefs from you. Are they experiencing shepherding? Now, I wouldn't use those words, but you want to try to discover that. What's your God doing for you? You know? In what way, shape, or form is he addressing the distress and the dispiritedness of who you are and what you're doing? Then he said to his disciples, in the context of that, in the context of his compassion, in the context of him being fully active in his public ministry, then he said to his disciples, the harvest is big. It's plentiful. It's beyond our imagination how big the harvest is. Maybe much more so now than it was when Jesus spoke those words, but he was looking at all of it, right? Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. Now, at the risk of revealing too much, Skip has a friend who is very focused on going back into his culture, which is a different religion than Christianity, but he's become an authentic believer. And he wants to take what he has and bring it back into his culture in the way that this is describing. He doesn't want to go back and be an evangelist. He wants to go back and help. He wants to help his neighbors. He wants to help his culture. He wants to make a difference in the lives of the people. And I think the king's compassion is all about that. That's why he said, you know, pray to the Lord of the harvest. You never know when you're talking to somebody what their sphere is, what their background is, what their orb is. You know, who knows where the gospel will go if you have an opportunity to share the light. Ephesians chapter 2. I know this is wearing you out. I feel emotionally spent, but we'll do these last two. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 14. So, starting to summarize it a little bit in my brain, I was thinking about this particular passage. It just kind of crystallized. Chapter 2, verse 14. Oh, chapter 2. I see why they don't trust me. Chapter 2, verse 14. For he himself is our peace. Now think about what we just talked about. Dispirited, you know, like sheep without a shepherd. He himself is our peace. He's not only our light, he is our peace. Who made both groups into one. Jews and Gentiles. He made them into one group. He broke down the barrier of the dividing wall. And if you don't believe there's a dividing wall between Jews and Gentiles, just pay attention to what's going on politically around the world. You know, when Trump, when he declared Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish nation, apparently he didn't hear from a few nations saying they didn't like it. He heard from every nation. What do you think that is? I mean, all you have to do is read the book of Romans and you understand the place of the Jews in the plan of God. Anyway, he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one, broke down the barrier of the dividing wall by abolishing in his flesh the enmity, which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so that in himself he might make the two into one new man. And that is your goal. Whether you call yourself an evangelist, whether you call yourself a peacemaker, whatever you call yourself, however you're gifted, that is your goal right there, is to find that place of connection where another person can experience the light so that they can know the peace of God and they can join, not Christianity, so that they can join the one new man, the one new authentic man made in Christ. And so I couldn't get by this without reading Acts 17 because, you know, I return to this passage a lot because it just stirs my soul, you know. It's like the ultimate, here's the Jew of Jews, you know, and he's in the middle of not Jews. He's surrounded, and he's in the city of Athens, and he's not only surrounded by non-Jews, he's surrounded by people who come from every nation under heaven, but not there to celebrate the feasts like they would in Jerusalem. This is totally different. And from this, if I ever wanted to see a template, if there is such a thing, for sharing the light, I just love this passage. Chapter 17. We'll abbreviate it a little bit, pop down to verse 22. So Paul stood up in the midst of the Areopagus. So you see the columns and you can see the city, you know, the Greek feel. And he said, "Men of Athens, I observe that you are very religious in all respects. My Hindu friend, you know, my Buddhist friend, I can see you've described to me what your faith looks like. I can see that. I can identify with that. I can understand it. For while I was passing through and examining the objects of your worship, and I took the time to look so that I could understand your objects of worship, so I could understand your worship, I also found an altar in the midst of that looking with this inscription, to an unknown God. Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you. So I don't know if I'd use the word ignorant, because it means a little bit something different there. I would probably say something like, hey, let me tell you what I've found. Let me tell you where I've come in my journey from where I was to where I am now. The God who made the world and everything in it, he's Lord of heaven and earth. He doesn't dwell in temples made with hands, not in Rome, you know, not anywhere, not in Athens. Not in any corner of the world is there a place where God is interested in dwelling, including the temple itself. And he commanded it to be built. But where is it? Gone. Why is it gone? Because of the sins of the people. The God who made the world and all things in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Boom. Nor is he even served by human hands, as though he needed anything. Think about all of the idols that we have in Christianity and all of the other faiths in the world. You know, depending upon what part of the world we live in, we have all of these images, right? And we're no different. We have our images in America. We have our images in Christianity. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people. He gave it to you. He's the one. He is the one who gave you life. He gave you breath. He gave you all things. And he made from, here it is again, one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. I can't tell you how encouraging that is to me. Every time I think about my dreams and the ones that have worked and the ones that haven't worked, I go, well, God, you know the boundaries of my habitation. You know the limits of my life. You designed it for me because you love me, because you care for me. That they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him. And that's what people in other religions are doing. And that's what people are doing in lots of parts of Christianity, not all of them. But they're groping, they're looking, they're trying to find God. Why do you grope? Well, you grope because you're in the dark, right? No light. They would seek God if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. You know, that's the old, you know, where is he? For in him we live, we move, and exist. Now think about this in relationship to New Age thinking and whatever. There's almost something in here for everybody as far as a point of connection. For in him we live and we move and we exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are his children. Being then the children of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. Therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to men that all people everywhere should repent, because he has fixed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness through a man, through whom he is appointed, having furnished proof to all men by raising him from the dead. And there's the resurrection. And that's when part of the crowd began to sneer, because these people are too smart to believe that there's a resurrection. These people are too smart, at least some of them. So that's just some ideas for common ground. You know, again, I don't think it's a prescription. Sam Schweitzer and I were together yesterday, and we were talking, about communicating, how we communicate. And this came out of the conversation. I thought it was really good. The first thing we do as we go is we pray to God for discernment. Then the second thing that we do is we become a compassionate searcher. We care about the people that we're interacting with, right? It's not just a matter of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then we create safety as we listen, and we're inclusive, and we're willing to explore and learn. Now, this actually, Sam and I kind of boiled it down into this next thing that's here, but this came out of Kent and Nancy's thing that was in the podcast. And so we were talking with Kent and Nancy the other day in a group, and we talked about, well, what is it that, how do we express shared humanity? And I really would encourage you to read it. I mean, it's just really good. It's right down there. Just click on the link. But the conclusion that then Sam and I came to as we were talking is that how do you experience deepening communication? Well, first of all, everybody knows how to do the sports, the weather, the kids, the events, right? Everybody gets that. Yeah. Second of all, the next level of communication is insight. What's going on with you? You know, what's going on with you? What's happening in your life? And that's moving then to the next level of communication. The next level after that is, how do you feel about it? That's the level of connection. Now, this is a big deal. This took me like 45 years to learn this. So I'd be taking a picture of it if I were you and going home and looking at it and standing in the mirror and going, I can do this. How do you feel about that? And how do you draw people into conversations about what they're experiencing? It's not just about feelings, it's about experiences. And then finally, that leads to the deeper issues, the issues of faith. What happens with a lot of people? Well, we're okay with number one, but we're kind of awkward with two and three, so we jump to number four because we know we're supposed to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. I see that hand. Anyway. What Kent and Nancy articulated was needs, desires, and enter into people's suffering. Enter into their needs, enter into their desires, enter into their suffering. And you've heard me say a million times how suffering is a door for the light. And when you see somebody suffering, you can be pretty sure that a door has opened and you have an opportunity to at least pray about that door, if not walk through it.